This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Welcome to this episode of Herding Code, being recorded on March 24th, 12. Today's guest is Paul Stack. Paul's currently employed as a team lead for an internationally known restaurant booking service where he leads a team working on the .NET platform. He's spoken throughout the UK at developer user group events and a number of regional events. He talks about his experiences of continuous integration and about the benefit of continuous delivery. And that's why we want to have him on the show, because we wanted to find out a little more about continuous delivery ourselves. So welcome to the show, Paul.
Thank you very much for having me.
And if you could you give us a brief introduction about what is this thing that you're calling continuous delivery?
So quite a while ago, I started obsessing over continuous integration because of a company that I worked in that I had some pretty interesting experiences with their applications and source code and deployments. And continuous integration really became a passion for me, and the next step after continuous integration was continuous delivery. But people often get continuous delivery and continuous deployment mixed up, and they're actually two very separate concepts. So that's why I talk a lot about continuous delivery.
And what is it? I mean, and maybe we could start with continuous integration, just for in case people aren't familiar with that term. And actually, it was a few shows ago, we had a show on continuous testing with, testers that can run in the background, and every time you save a file, it runs all your unit tests. I think the logical progression for a lot of people is to go from continuous testing to continuous integration and onward, right?
Yeah, so continuous testing and continuous integration, that they actually sit quite well hand in hand. So the benefit of continuous integration is that you're consistently building your source code. So as developers, we continually check into a central branch. I don't know what you want to call that, whether it's the trunk or the master. It depends on what type of source control you use. And you would have a continuous integration tool of some sort, continually checking that code out from source code. You'll be running it against a build agent of whatever kind, whether it's MS Build or PowerShell or Rake or whatever you want. And you can get feedback pretty much straight away whether the new code that you've written has actually integrated well with the other developer's code.
So if that's continuous integration, then what is continuous delivery? What is continuous deployment? Why are those two things different?
So continuous delivery is the next step on. So integration itself only tests whether your code actually is ready to be used in a production-like environment or in, it's made production-ready. So what continuous delivery is the actual preparation, the mechanism for actually releasing the application itself. So if you think of web deploy, for example, web deploy actually releases your code, whereas you could have a little build engine which creates web packages and pushes them to some central location ready for that package to be picked up by an operations department and ready to be delivered. That is what continuous delivery is. It's making the software ready to be delivered at any point, so it's getting it prepped.
Okay, it's prep. It's not necessarily putting it into production like right off of your build server.
That's exactly it.
And in between those steps then, between before you get it into production, is there some manual checking? Is there anything else that has to happen?
Well, this is where your continuous testing comes in. So not only can you have your unit test running, but you can have your integration test running, you can have your automation front-end test running, you can have stress tests running, you can have tear-up and tear-down setups if you're running an installer. And that's really where it is. In order to know that your software is ready to be released, you'll want that continuous level of testing, not just on the unit level, but as I say, the whole way through the application.
So I'm not completely clear on the difference between, or the distinction between continuous integration and continuous delivery. Because in continuous integration, setups I've used before, like there were integration tests that were running. So there's like a build server and it's doing all these, it's not just, building, but it's also doing these integration tests. What's further beyond that? Is it the act of actually building a deployment package?
Yeah, that's it. So continuous delivery is that you can have, with a continuous delivery server, at any point you can press a button or run a script and that package will be able to be delivered. It's a web-ready package or a desktop server-ready package that you don't have to do any further manipulation to. continuous integration isn't that. That is just testing how the code works and how the code interacts and whether the code actually compiles or passes your tests.
And you made it clear that you're not just automatically deploying every single one of these, but I would assume the goal is that you are deploying pretty rapidly, right? You make changes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it fits very well with the Agile ethos that you can change pretty fast, and that if things need to move and you're half, you know, you've got one feature complete and you're not quite ready for another feature, then you can sort of deploy that feature. It's a continuous stream of features that can be released into your application.
So is there, that brings up a good point. Is there a distinction between continuous delivery or continuous deployment where you actually do push every change out and one where, or a situation where you're just ready to deploy anytime you want and maybe you hold back for a marketing event or PR or things like that?
So desktop software is a great example of this. It's more difficult to push out releases of desktop software on every build because it requires people to update. You could have new installer packages, much like Skype. Every time you log in now, it annoys people that you've got a new package to download. Maybe that's a bit controversial, but with the website, it's a little bit different. So you can sort of see less... trying to think of the way to phrase it. You see less disruption. So you have a site and the next day you can go on and you can have a feature. It doesn't really, unless it's a feature that impacts someone that you were on before, it doesn't really impact you on using the site or continuing to use the site. And that continuous deployment enables that, you know, you can keep three or four features together. And if you have a PR event or a marketing event, like you said, you can release them in time for that event. Continuous deployment, on the other hand, is that every build that runs on your server that is green passes the test, that actually will go out the door. That will actually be deployed.
So you're not doing continuous delivery or continuous deployment. You're doing just kind of the continuous integration and delivery, right? You're ready. You've got packages that are ready to go, but you're not pushing them live on every commit.
That's exactly it. I think sometimes there are other factors that people get nervous about that stop you pushing every build live. So, you know, you have to have quite a good infrastructure in place where you don't really want to have downtime. If you have a website, you don't want to kill people's sessions on your servers. You'd need possibly good database integration and so on and so forth.
So I'm gonna go off the rails here, Kay Scott. Everybody hang on.
I'm braced.
So
my loins are girded.
Oh Lord. So traditionally, one of the biggest pain points for me when trying to deploy has been the stinking database, because you've got to update schemas and you've got to have enough databases to be able to, you know, just have some running, you know, so you run at kind of a diminished capacity so that you can take the other ones offline and update the schemas. And you have to make sure that the databases that are live are in sync with the code changes that are live. And so you kind of pull off, you know, app server, database servers in pairs or in groups, at least of even numbers, so that you can get those updated and get them back into production as quickly as possible. And if you're trying to do replication, other than block level replication, I haven't found a replication scheme that really allows you to deploy without having to shut down one or more of the replicated sites, one of the nodes. What's your experience been with that, and how can, do you have any tips for being able to deploy to databases, or at least deploy database changes without causing lots of pain to your sysadmins and lots of long, nervous nights for devs? Because it's not just the deployment, it's also, oh, something went wrong, you have to be able to roll it back to the state it was before. And traditionally, that's just been we'll take a snapshot right before you do that. But if you've got multiple nodes and you're still taking in orders, you've got to sync that data around, and it's a giant mess. So anything that you've encountered so far?
So databases are really the point of which developers lose confidence in the ability to deploy continuously. I actually blogged about this sort of towards the end of 2011, and every single person was like, yeah, database is my issue. So I've been quite spoiled. So in the companies that I've been able to head towards a more continuous deployment style pattern, we've been really lucky because we've used the distributed cache layer. And the cache layer is just filled with data from our database. We have a little application that runs and just checks that if the cache server needs any data, it fills it up. So I could actually take my database offline for up to 30 minutes, which would actually allow me to deploy my database changes, test those database changes, and then if everything was okay, continue those database changes. And then if not, we could roll back at that point. So whenever it comes to actual database changes, there are a few tools. There are some free tools, there are some OSS tools, and you know, there are some paid for tools as well that are really useful. They're really, really useful. So SQL Compare, I don't know if I can mention the names of the tools. I'm not really sure. What do you guys reckon?
You just did.
Okay. Yes. Well, I'm sure you'll cut it.
Especially if they want to give us money. Oh wait, no. I'm sorry.
Okay. So Redgate SQL Compare is a really useful tool that you can actually use from the command line as part of your continuous integration script. So you'll give it a source database and you'll give it a target database, and it'll actually generate the SQL diff scripts for you. Now, because you're generating them one way, you reverse the order in which you put them in, and you automatically get your SQL rollback scripts as well. So it is quite useful, but you know, it's one of those beasts where you really have to sit down and weigh up the benefits of continuous deployment over the, you know, those nightmares that you said that your sysadmins have and the developers have in their late night deployments.
You know, as you're saying that, I'm thinking that you end up building, like you're saying, you have your data architected differently, and I'm assuming that the constraint of continuous delivery kind of pushes you in some directions, and I've generally found that to be pretty good. Like when I'm trying to push systems that traditionally had released very rarely or more waterfall, and the more rapidly you deliver, like not only does it improve your processes, but it improves your architecture. Do you find that to be the case too?
Very much. It introduces real good concepts. It means that your builds have to be fast, that everything is scripted and automated so that it can be run again and again, and that there's, you know, you really iron out deployment issues in that case. You also get that with continuous delivery, you've got the mechanism for everyone in the team to take care of the releases. You don't take that packaged piece of software and throw it over the wall anymore to an operations team. You really want to see at any point where things are, because it introduces something called the deployment pipeline. So at any point you can actually see where a feature is from concept until release, and continuous delivery is great for that.
Yeah, so we're starting to talk about a few tools here, and I'm assuming that if a developer is set up with something like TeamCity, well, let's even start before that. I mean, you have some sort of source control repository. Let's say it's Git, or let's just say it's Git. I mean, are there any specific techniques that you have to use with version control to make this easier?
So some people think that they're actually doing continuous integration, and they're not really doing continuous integration. Continuous integration is whenever you're actually pushing your source code back to a master repository at least once a day. So if you have a long-winded feature branch that developers are, you know, sectioned off and siloed off in each team, they're not actually integrating their code with the other teams. And that's where merge issues can happen, and that's where integration issues can happen. So a centralized version control system makes it very easy for developers to take branches and continue working in those branches. Whereas the pull request type system of a Git-based system means that, you know, they can push it back into a single branch very regularly, because they can cherry pick the releases and the features that they're bringing back in quite easily.
So if you're working on a feature that's going to take a few iterations, let's say it would take an entire month to complete, is that something that you're pushing into master the whole time?
Yeah, so there's source control techniques that will allow you to do that. So the first one's branch by abstraction. And what that is that you've got a class, and that class, you've got an interface, the interface implements class A. So if you want to change how class A works, you would just implement a new class, continue to write some tests and write some functionality against, let's call it class B, and then the functionality of class A doesn't change. So whenever you're finished working on the master, you'll just swap across the implementation of the interface to use the new class, kill the old class, and you've actually developed on the actual main branch.
And nothing actually happens in production until someone switches that over, right, the classes.
That's exactly it. You can actually have your IOC container take care of this for you. And I know IOC containers are a little bit of a not flavor of the month at the minute, but they're very useful in this case, because if you use something like spring.net, I know that's a bit old school in IOC containers, but because it's got an XML configuration, you can just switch the XML file just to say, let this interface implement this new class, and just switch it right at the end whenever you need to.
And what about for something that impacts the user interface layer?
So for front-end development, where I could switch in features at build time or actual compile time, I would use a feature switching library. So there's a great one for .NET on GitHub called nFeature. It's by a guy called Ben Aston. And what that allows people to do is just wrap a piece of UI functionality with a simple toggle to say, if feature is available or is switched on, then show it, otherwise don't. So the nice thing about that means is that basically, unless that feature is switched on, that code will not render on the front end.
That's great. I could see that as like an HTML helper for MVC, right?
That's exactly it. That is it's exactly the functionality that you can wrap in a HTML helper. And you can make that the code behind the HTML helper call a web service, call a database. It can just call your web config. It's very easy to be able to switch features on and off. So the most famous people for this are Flickr. So Flickr actually have a dashboard that they can switch features on and off on their site just by going to an admin page.
Yeah, that's amazing. They do something. They do close to like 100 deployments a week sometimes, right?
Yeah, they're very much on the verge of continuous deployment. I don't think every live build or every good build goes live, but pretty close. They've got a very large percentage of them. One of the biggest amounts of deployments I've actually heard is was a company in the US called Etsy. I don't know if anyone's heard of them. Mm-hmm. And they were actually doing up to 52 deployments a day at one point.
Yeah, and so we've talked about some of the benefits of this, which is ironing out deployment issues and making sure everything just goes smooth and anyone on the team is able to push a button and have things happen. What are some of the other advantages?
The big advantage is feedback. So the faster we get our product out there, the faster we can get some feedback. It's all very well and good that we can, as a team, we can decide what we think the user wants. But unless we actually get software delivered in a fashion that the users can actually take advantage of, then we're not really going to get any feedback on those new features.
All right. Questions from Twitter, too. I know Jim, sorry about this, Jim. Jim Arganropoulos. asked about suggestions for databases and data warehousing. We talked about that a little bit. He also asked about PowerShell equivalents of Chef and Puppet. I guess this is talking about where you say everything has to be heavily automated. You need some scripts to work some magic. Is that where tools like Chef and Puppet come in?
Yeah, so Chef and Puppet are very Unix-based systems that are actual configuration management tools. So you can spin up a new environment, or you can control the patches that go in an environment, and you can spin up new servers very easily. And up until quite recently, I think it's Puppet 2.7.6. I don't know what version we've actually got now. I think we're at like Puppet 2.9 or something. Up until that point, Puppet wasn't actually able to be used in a Windows environment, but it is actually now able to be used, and we do have Windows support. So we can actually, Puppet and Chef, they refer to things as recipes, and we can actually have recipes now for installing applications and managing IIS and managing SQL Server and how to manage actual SQL Server databases themselves and their users with their database cookbooks and so on. So it's a feature that's very much starting to come and be ported towards Windows, but it's not quite the finished article on Windows as it is on Unix-based systems.
Wouldn't that be similar to just using some MS Build tasks or PowerShell plus MS Build? What's the different characteristics there?
For me, it is. I do everything via PowerShell now, and I have a Hyper-V shell host, that I can spin up new instances of virtual servers really fast using my TeamCity instance, just using some very simple scripting. I have to admit, I haven't really gained what the benefit to me would be of Puppet and Chef, only because I'm heavy in the automation anyway, and I take care of everything in an automated fashion.
Someone else, John Hamm, is asking some questions that relate to some tools. So he asked, how would you handle deployments from TFS for Windows services? Would it be MSI, NuGet, Chocolaty, Bottles, WebDeploy?
I think WebDeploy goes really, really well with TFS. It's a project that you can right-click and you can publish from an actual Visual Studio window in it. It's sort of baked into the framework. I know some versions of WebDeploy have been pretty tough to actually configure, but from the new features I've seen in WebDeploy 3, you can actually store your deployment scripts as part of your source control repository and script that up very easily. So that goes quite well. You could use something, I'm not sure if you guys have heard of it, it's called Octopus Deploy. So effectively what that, it works in a very similar fashion to NuGet, and it uses NuGet packages in order to deploy those packages to different nodes of your application. So you would think of each server or a cluster of servers as a tentacle, and you could deploy an application via a package to that cluster or to that actual server.
We're prototyping it where I work now to see if it's going to be a good deployment fit for us. Really, all we need right now is rules and authentication that tied into Active Directory or some other mechanism.
And do you like it so far?
Yeah, it's great. We plan on upgrading to Team City 7 in the very near future. I'm responsible for that, so who knows when the hell it'll happen. But since Team City has the ability to package up NuGet files natively and serve them out, act as a NuGet server, we started looking at Octopus Deploy for that reason there, so we could push out to test and user acceptance automatically from our build.
So before Octopus Deploy came along, I actually did something very similar using build agents from Team City. So a build agent is about, I think it's like £200. So I don't know what it is, $300 or something. So it's relatively cheap. And I could take one of those build agents and put it on a cluster of my production servers. I could then package the application and push that actual package artifact to that server, let the server unzip it, and just use a simple Xcopy deployment actually on the server itself. So it did something very similar, but what Paul Stavelle has come along and done with Octopus has made it much more clever.
Yeah, we did something similar. We weren't using Team City. We were using, Cruise Control. But we were doing it with WAR files. And WAR files are just, I don't know, maybe not everyone knows what they are, but they stand for Web Archives. It's the Java world's version of a deployment package. So you just deploy this WAR file, which is basically a zip file with a manifest, to your Java app server, and it knows how to unzip it and read the manifest and serve out the content. Yeah, so we had something like that where we would build the WAR file and then just Xcopy it out to a server where we wanted to, just straight from a script. That's my pointless story of this podcast.
That's okay. I've just given you one as well.
That's good, actually. So the goal of this, you know, if I'm using something like Team Server and I'm spitting out a package that someone can just walk up to and by pushing a button or by running something from the command line, it puts everything that I need onto a server. I mean, that's pretty close to continuous delivery at that point. And you'd have to have a high degree of confidence that everything's going to work. So you've had automated tests running throughout to get that done. Is that a good summary of the goal here?
Yeah, very much. It's the ability at any point to create production-ready software that you can actually release at the click of a button. Now, because if you have a proper continuous delivery pipeline, then the times between packaging your software to be ready makes the increments in the software very small. So the fact that you're releasing such small amounts of changes often means that the magnitude of risk of things going wrong actually decreases. So you could have a bug that happens on your application, and it's only been 2 days or 1 day or whatever amount of time since you've last deployed, and you'll know, you can track it down to that X amount of times worth of code. Whereas in traditional waterfall, or what some people think they're doing now as agile, they would maybe package for, or they'd store up code up for maybe 5, 6, 7 weeks and then release it as a huge block and batch the deployment. So if you have a problem in 7 weeks of code, then it's going to be very difficult in order to track that down. And you could have to do a complete rollback.
So in the case where something does go wrong and you need to roll back to a previous version, is that considered part of the continuous delivery pipeline or tool set? I mean, is that Is that all, you know, lumped under the same sort of machinery?
So you can do a few things. Rollback is fine. I personally don't have a problem with rollback. If it's a very, very small piece of the puzzle and you've released some, so you're releasing daily and you're only rolling back one piece of code for the last day, then I don't think that's a problem. But if you have these feature toggles in order to switch parts of your application off, if it so happens that that feature is causing you problems, just switch it off. You don't even have to roll back then. You're just flicking some XML or a database config switch or just a simple web config value, and that will switch off the offending piece of code.
Since you have those feature toggles, do you end up doing like A/B testing or exposing, you know, like rolling out a feature across different people or different groups?
Yeah, for sure. So a simple A/B testing filter will actually allow you to do that. So you can actually call it canary releasing. So if you have an application farm of 5 web servers, I'm going back to web development. I am a web developer, so you'll have to forgive me for that. So you can take 2 of those servers out of the entire load balanced group. You can deploy your application to there. You can run your tests against there. Once you're happy, you can section off a very small amount of your user base to those new, to the servers running the new code, and just make sure that the features are good. So automated testing can all be very well and good, but so if you think of an e-commerce website and you have an application that's got a buy button and it's called buy.gif, if someone somehow swaps in another version of buy.gif, which is actually a blank button, then all your tests will pass because your automated systems will see the HTML and the unit tests will pass and your APIs will pass. But the actual users themselves will not be able to buy from your application. So you'll know pretty fast from a small amount of your user base if something has gone wrong.
But is that really optimal to find out about a problem from your user base?
No, not at all. But it's better to find out from a very small section of your user base than if everything has gone well in your testing and it's been rolled out to your entire farm. So that's the benefit of canary releasing will mean that only a very small amount of users can be affected. As soon as it's noticed, you can either roll that server back and put it into the main farm, or you can make a patch on the fly. It's entirely, I don't know what the development process for whatever people are involved in that.
It seems like it'd also be relatively painless to set up A/B testing as well. If you're already deploying from a single branch, it seems like you'd be able to set up to deploy from 2 different branches maybe, and you have A/B versions of pages or sites or whatever.
That's it. You should really just be able to tell your CI server the new branch to create the package from. And then once the package is created, it can then be deployed in the same way as your mainline.
So what you're describing is really about risk mitigation.
Yeah, for sure. So because you would be able, with continuous delivery, the change sets should be pretty small. So therefore, the risk of something going wrong is a lot smaller in itself. Now, you're deploying more often, and that brings in more risk in itself because you're consistently changing the way the application is running. But because you're introducing such small change sets at any time, the magnitude of that risk is actually decreased. Whereas if you were going to make a huge deployment that has been bubbling for 7 or 8 weeks, then that makes it a lot more difficult in order to keep that risk down.
Speaking of risk, I know there's some places you certainly can walk into and start describing some of these things that you are doing, and they'll just look at you like you've grown horns out of your head, right? They just see it as tremendously risky, as something they don't want anything to do with. Have you ever had to fight the battle to get this to work?
Every time I give this talk to a user group or an event, I get the same questions and the same points again and again. And the first one that it's usually said is people put their hands up straight away and it's like, I can't do this. My company would never go for it. They don't believe that releasing often is better than releasing less often because they batch their changes together. So the question from Mary and Tom Poppendyke in Implementing Lean Software book actually says, how long would it take your organization to deploy a change that involved a single line of code? And can you do this on a repeatable, reliable basis? So whenever someone say that they cannot do this, their company would never go for it, I would usually ask them that question. We would sit down, if it's an event, I would talk to them after the talk, and we'd possibly draw a value mapping stream. So I've actually noticed that people who say that they would never be able to go for this, that their company would never accept it, usually have quite a large value mapping stream, and that it takes them quite a long time in order to get a product to market. So I would argue back to them and say, why would you not go for this? If you're going to make your company get better feedback and make better software and possibly make better money for this, then that, it's a no-brainer for me.
So sometimes, like big changes like this, are you have to present a case to management and you have to, you know, convince them, or you have to do it maybe on a smaller project and show success and, you know, build from there. But sometimes you can do things like this internally, you know, and you can just make it work and you can kind of present a facade of doing waterfall or whatever processes make people happy. But you know, internally use practices and just kind of let them bubble up. Is there a way to kind of incrementally or internally do, you know, get some of these advantages? Let's say I'm in a company that just, you know, I'm the pointy-headed boss and I've said, absolutely not, we will not do continuous delivery. And, you know, would you still be able to do anything that could get some of these values?
So at that point, I would personally start with a very small win. So a small win in this case would be we would continuously deliver software to our QA environment or our pre-prod environment, and then show them that the product managers can get feedback faster. They're actually able to see working versions of the software on a 1 day or a two day basis. And that is still, in essence, continuous delivery. You're still delivering a piece of software to your customer. It just so happens that your customer, in this case, is your product owner or your product manager. So you could sell it that way. Or, as you say, you could take an internal system that doesn't really affect anybody, and you could sort of move towards a continuous delivery style pattern there. So there are a number of ways that you could take care of it.
And what are some of the pitfalls of continuous delivery?
So the actual pitfalls, whenever we're developing software, people say software is easy. The actual development of the software itself is quite easy. It's where software developers seem to struggle is actually getting their software out the door. So I don't know how many times I've heard of people saying, oh, I've got a brand new application idea I'm going to start an open source project on. And then they'll work on it and they'll work on it and they'll work on it, and they'll realize in 3 months' time that somebody else has already beaten them to the punch. Because they haven't been releasing it fast enough and getting feedback, somebody has actually beaten them and got their software to market a little bit faster or out to the community or whatever. So the pitfalls itself is that you need to get feedback as soon as possible. And developers don't tend to get the software in a fashion where it can be fed back upon. But then the main pitfall is that the first time that we actually deliver our software to a production-like environment is at the end of the project. And that's the first time we're going to be able to test the interactions, we're going to be able to test the environment, and so on. And that's what gives us some problems. That's the real delivery pitfall.
Are there some projects or teams where continuous delivery just wouldn't work well?
I don't know. I haven't come across any places at all that continuous delivery wouldn't work upon, because we're continuously developing our software in order to make it better, in order to get to market, in order to make our companies money. I don't know a single company that don't want to make money. So Microsoft and the NuGet team, and they've started releasing their software a lot faster. They're getting a lot more feedback a lot quicker. And it's actually worked really well for NuGet, because you can see features moving on a faster basis. Whereas the Visual Studio team, for example, they released the Visual Studio 11 beta, and it was really the first time that people had seen the grayscale theme, and they got a little bit of negative feedback for it. And if maybe they had it delivered on a little bit of a faster pattern, and I know it might not be, it might be more difficult because of legislation and so on, but they can still deliver in a little bit smaller chunks, and that could potentially stop the real negative feedback and get people in the loop a little bit faster.
Jeff Atwood wants to know, would you eat the moon if it were made of ribs? Who let Atwood ask question?
I would totally eat the moon. I was supposed to go out for some geek ribs tonight in London. So I have ribs on my mind. So I'm just going to look out the window and just see a giant rack of barbecue ribs in the sky.
Oh, man. Well, thanks for staying up and doing the show. So I had a question going back to what we were talking about earlier, kind of related to the A/B test, because I know you work with an environment where you have to be highly scalable to work really well because it's a relatively high-profile company. When you push things out, do you have benchmarks of previous releases, like how well things do with CPU and memory and so forth? Can you detect changes if someone introduced a scalability issue?
Yes, we're quite lucky in my company. We have a guy who absolutely loves and protects his benchmarking system with his life. So I once had the password to it, and I believe it was changed pretty soon after. And he's developed a really good system that can actually detect right down to nanoseconds how much longer a search path or a reservation path takes, and actually how that could possibly affect, you know, say we've got 4 million users, how that could affect the CPU usage. So we have a really good benchmarking suite that between every release and just before the release actually goes out, the site for the main functionality is actually benchmarked.
That's great. So Brian Dukes on Twitter wants to know if continuous delivery or something like it can be applied to product development as opposed to the infinite version websites.
So I presume that Brian Dukes is talking about actual desktop software or actual application software rather than a website. Can anyone confirm?
That's kind of what it sounds like to me.
Okay. So Brian Dukes' question about continuous delivery for products. So if we take Chrome, for example, Chrome has a really good system that it doesn't affect the user whenever it's actually updating itself. And the developers at Google can push out versions of Chrome, many versions a day, and developers or users will not see any real issues. So continuous delivery doesn't just need to be for websites. It's just very easy to do websites because of the packaging tools and the continuous integration servers that we currently have.
Yeah, Chrome is beautiful. I know a lot of people talk about this, but I've been really aggravated lately. Every time I have to reboot a computer, you have to go through the Java update, the Skype update, the Flash update. Every app on my phone wants to update every week, and I always have to push buttons to do all this. I just wish more people were like Chrome and could just slip things in for me, and I never have to worry about it.
That's the goal. That's what we'd all love that in our software. We don't want to have to install updates ourselves. We're in 2012. We should be at the system now where an installation of an application doesn't need a reboot, for example. So as developers, we should take that on board and we should try and make that better to do.
All right. John, Kevin?
I had one more, which are there things where you run into where the technology is holding you back from, you know what I mean? Where there's like, if only, you know, I don't know, website systems or you know, frameworks or things would catch up to where you want to be, you could have an easier time with continuous delivery.
Well, I think newer technology has helped us achieve continuous delivery in an easier fashion. So going back to web examples, so web config transformations and tokenization has really come on in the last year or 2 years. And it would be really difficult in order to make a web config ready to be deployed on a web application, say maybe 5 or 6 years ago. So what we would have done in another company is we would actually have stored copies of the web config for the different environments and the different sectors. And we would then have to use an MS build task in order to rename and delete in order to bring in the correct web config. So I don't think it's a case of that technology has meant that we can now start the continuous deliver. It's actually happened an awful lot. It's more a case of technology has helped us achieve it in a faster way and an easier way.
All right, here's another question for you. What is the badass rockstar technology?
It's got to be Node.js. It's the it's the baddest rockstar technology since Ruby on Rails.
Awesome. Oh, Kevin's going to chime in.
Obviously, I got to do a big high five on the Node comment there. But are there common mistakes people make early in their development process that throw up barriers to continuous deployment? If you know what I mean, like mistakes people make that if they were aware ahead of time would make things easier for them.
I think the big one is the version control system. If you don't use version control in the correct way that you can continuously integrate your software, then it's going to be very difficult to achieve continuous delivery. You've got to be able to get your application in and get it building against all the other code that's there. You can then run your test against everything. And then at that point, your software is ready. Now, if you're a developer and you're tucked away in a long-running feature branch for 3 or 4 weeks, it's going to be very difficult for you to take that code, merge it back in and be 100% confident, you could really have some merge issues and you could lose some functionality. So for me, continuous, the 100% precursor for continuous delivery is continuous integration. And if you don't get that right, with all the best intentions, I don't think you can actually achieve continuous delivery.
Good point. So here's a follow-up question to that. When would you start thinking about continuous delivery? Would it be at the very beginning when you've, or would it be a couple sprints in when you've got some code in source control already?
So I'm just about to start a new project at work, and I've already, before I've even worked out any of the requirements with the project manager, I have already got my continuous delivery system in mind. In order to get that application building every day, pushing it to our QA environment, pushing it to our pre-prod environment so that my product manager can see the changes of the software and that they can almost feed back and change the course of the way the application development is happening. So I think about it personally. I set up my CI server. I set up my source code repository all at the start of the application. It's all one continuous thing for me.
Sweet. All right. So, Paul, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Have anything coming up that you'd like to let everyone know about? Any appearances, any user groups, anything like that?
I don't know. I don't think I do, actually. I think I'm waiting patiently to find out if I can get into AuraDev. Unfortunately, I don't have any other speaking engagements booked at the minute, but I'm trying to arrange some courses and continuous delivery workshops in the UK. So hopefully more info on that soon.
Oh, nice. Yeah. You should definitely get out there more and talk about this. You have a lot of good insights.
This is what I'm quite passionate about, so I could talk about this all day. Quite literally.
All right. Thank you, Paul, and thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Come back again sometime in the future for some new episode of Herding Code.